ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there. My name is Matt Brand. Welcome to the Country Hour, a very special program today. I am broadcasting from the Victoria River Research Station, better known as Kidman Springs. To get to this location, you need to drive west of Katherine until you get about 30 kilometres from Timber Creek. You then chuck a left and go down the Buchanan Highway. You go down about 80 kilometres of dirt road through some of the most spectacular country in the Northern Territory. I'm telling you, Jasper Gorge, late in the afternoon, it is absolutely stunning. From there, you arrive at Kidman Springs, which has been a government research station since the year 1966. And every couple of years or so, Kidman Springs holds a field day. They open up the front gate and let people in. And this year, more than 100 people have made the journey to this research station to learn about all kinds of interesting research and trials that are happening here on the property. And over the next hour on ABC Radio, you'll get to hear about this work as well and meet some of the people out here this week in the VRD. Our first story today on the Country Hour takes us out into the paddocks of Kidman, where 700 head of cattle are roaming around with large black and orange collars around their neck. What is going on out here? Well, it's all part of the biggest virtual fencing trial in the Northern Territory.
Hi, I'm Christy Pearson. I am a livestock research officer with NT DAF based out of Katherine, and we do research projects all across the NT with cattle.
And here we are at Kidman Springs Station in the VRD, where there's about 700 head of cattle wandering around with these virtual fencing collars around their necks. Tell us the story. What's happening out here?
Well, we started doing a bit of virtual fencing in May last year. We did a few trial pilot studies in smaller groups. We had a few different objectives. We wanted to see whether the virtual fencing was going to work in our extensive environment on our cattle, because it's a little bit different to down south. So we started off with between 50 and 100 head in a few different trial sites. Firstly, we wanted to see if we could exclude cattle from an area that we didn't want them to graze because it was recovering from being overgrazed, and we wanted to. The second thing we wanted to do was move them to a new water point in a paddock that they had only had one water point in previously. And then the third thing we wanted to do, a bit more intensive, we wanted to see whether we could strip graze a pivot with these collars in a bit more of an intensive system.
And did it work?
It did. It worked very well. We had about 98%. Success of keeping cattle within the virtual paddocks, so we're really happy with the tech so far.
Right.
And now we expanded that project onto a whole property demo level here at Kidman. So now we've got everything on Kidman above 200 kilos has a collar on it now. So
driving around today, I just felt like every animal I saw had a collar.
That's good. That's what we're after.
Yeah. And so these collars, how are they getting the information? How's that working?
So they're the LoRa collars. So there's two types of the eShepherd collars. There's the cellular ones and the LoRa ones. So the LoRa ones work from base stations that you can place strategically around your property. So we've got a few high points around Kidman, as you can see here. They've got some nice mountains around. So we've placed three base stations on high points around Kidman, and that gives us really good connectivity from collars through to towers to upload paddocks and connect to each animal.
Have you used it to muster cattle into the yards here?
No, we haven't. We've put the collars on in May, and we're about to start our second round muster next week. So one of our objectives was to see whether we can use the collars to muster and not have to use a helicopter, which is pretty common practice up here. Helicopters are pretty expensive, and everyone uses them to muster, so we're seeing if we can sort of replace a bit of that with the virtual fencing collars and walk them back to the yards rather than get a chopper out.
What do you think this sort of tech could mean for the north?
I think it's pretty exciting. Everything with tech just kind of gets exponentially better through time. So I think what we're seeing now is great, and that probably means that it's only going to get better through time. I think it can change a lot. A lot of practices in the north, mustering, labour shortages, all that kind of stuff, it's got potential to kind of address a lot of those big issues that we seem to have fairly regularly up here.
If you're tuning in, this is the Country Hour, and I'm at Kimmins Springs Station in the Victoria River District, which is using virtual fencing. And the guy behind this technology is Mark Dempsey from E. Shepherd Gallagher Next. What does it mean to you to see your collars being used in the north like this?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I mean, it's game-changing, really. We're seeing, you know, benefits on all sorts of production systems, not just here in Australia, but globally. But pretty exciting for us as a business to, you know, have a substantial, I guess, amount of collars, you know, in the one production system in the north here. And we see lots of opportunity. And working with Christy and the team's been really great. I mean, you know, they've made it look very easy to get, you know, collars on and get the animals, connected to the network. So, yeah, we're really excited to see what's to come over the next 12 months with the work they're doing here. So,
we've got one of the collars here, black and orange. How heavy are these things?
2.5 kilos.
Okay.
Yeah. And, yep, a whole lot of bling.
And solar panels. That's how they're powered.
That's right. So fully power autonomous, which is really, you know, a great feature. So essentially once a collar or neckband, as we call it, goes on an animal, they've got two large solar panels, got a really large long-life lithium battery. So, you know, we expect these to last around that 7 to 10 years. Once we collar an animal, unless we've got to bring it in on a younger sort of trade animal or we're finishing cattle, you know, we can leave that collar on a mature animal and turn it loose. And particularly here in the north, we want good power autonomy. We want good connectivity. We don't want to have to bring those animals in on a routine basis. So, yeah, it works really well.
Where do you think the real return on investment's going to be in northern Australia with this sort of tech?
Yeah, look, it's a great question, and I guess there's probably a lot of eyebrows getting raised at the moment for a lot of beef producers here in the north, and I think collectively as an industry, we're really exploring that together. So, in the south, it's all about intensive rotational grazing, but grass utilisation, but I guess, you know, some of the problems and challenges they face here in the north around, can range from anywhere from animal containment because the distances and the areas that we're putting animals in is so large. So just having full visibility of your animals, where they are, you know, even when you're mustering potentially with traditional methods, being able to see where those animals are in the paddock in real time with 10-minute updates, being able to locate them very quickly. That, you know, things like that's only going to create efficiencies and then, you know, excluding animals from certain parts of the property. So I think, you know, from a, you know, rotational grazing perspective, you know, that might be one of the benefits. But I think animal containment and movement's definitely probably one that's going to appeal to the, you know, the guys in the north.
Helicopters are expensive.
Very much so.
I saw a few cattle producers picking your brains today here at Kimmins Springs. What do they want before making an investment?
They want to see it proven, right? So, right. Like a lot of producers, you'll have a small handful of early adopters, and we see that again, you know, across all production systems. But, you know, then we've got the trailblazers like Christy and others who are willing to, you know, trial different things, you know, work with us as a business to try and tweak the algorithms and tweak the tech and the hardware to really sort of push boundaries. And that's our slogan, right? Pushing boundaries in livestock farming. And if we can identify a way that we can create efficiency through moving animals closer to a watering point, like Christy said, and doing it even over a period of days, I think, you know, the efficiencies around that, both from a, you know, labour and from a cost of, you know, aerial mustering perspective, has, you know, got huge potential.
It works out. I mean, if you take a big station here in the north, maybe running sort of over 50,000 head, mm-hmm. and each collar's $350, it is a lot of money, but it'd be worth it in your eyes?
It's a really great question, and I think it's a really rational question. I think, like any of our customers, you know, that we work with globally, I think it's really important to, you know, implement this technology where you're going to see the biggest return to start with, right? So obviously it's not feasible pretty much for most customers to go and collar 50,000 animals, you know.
Yeah, which is $17.5 million.
Exactly. So, but in saying that, if we can do it on a smaller scale with smaller mob sizes and we can identify that, okay, we've collared, you know, 300 animals over a period of 12 months, you know, this is both the monetary and the non-monetary return and investment that we've seen, and we can prove that, we can can scale up from there. And quite often in any production system, we always see generally our customers adopt 10 to 20% of their herd collared to start with. And there's sort of like the 90-day rule, right? We see them coming back in 90 days. Again, in the north, that may be very different because the production systems are so different up here. But I think, yep, it's good that we've got collars in the north here now. And I think, you know, there's only really exciting times ahead. And I think also integrating some other tech that we're working on, like VisionWay, advanced pasture monitoring, you know, integrating our watering monitoring into the platform. You know, farmers are inundated with lots of apps on their phone.
Yeah.
Just having one management platform where they can see their animals in real time, where they can move their animals, they can see their weight gain, they can see the condition and the performance of those animals, particularly in remote conditions and, you know, production systems like here in the north, I think, again, will create more labour efficiency and be able to, you know, allow producers to make, you know, smarter decisions remotely without actually having to, you know, get their animals in every time they want to weigh them or they want to see how they're performing or, you know, move them to another paddock.
Thanks so much for your time on the Country Hour, Mark.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Yeah, big thanks to Mark Dempsey from eShepherd Australia, and you also heard there from Chrissy Pearson from the NT Department of Ag. It's the biggest virtual fencing trial in the Northern Territory, and it's happening right here at Kinmen Springs, and that's where the Country Hour is broadcasting from this afternoon. I really hope you can stick around. Up next, you'll meet some of the keynote speakers at this field day, but first, let's have a song, and it's a special request from Kinmen Springs.
G'day, this is Jed Matz from the Department of Agriculture and Fisheries. I'd love to hear a bit of Slim Dusty today, Longyard, if that's right.
Yes, he's looking kind of jaded, and his sight is not the best, and the hair around his muzzle's turning grey.
They have got good musical tastes out here in the VRD. That's a bit of Slim Dusty for you on a Thursday lunchtime. This is the Country Hour. Matt Brown with you this afternoon, broadcasting from Kinmen Springs in the VRD, this famous research station, which is celebrating its 60th birthday in 2026. It has opened up the front gate this week for a field day. More than 100 people here. And on the Country Hour today, you're getting to meet some of the people involved and learn about some of the cool research that's happening out in this part of the Northern Territory. I'm here with Mary Williams, who's one of the extension officers here at Kinmen Springs. I'll give you your own microphone here, Mary. Take hold of that. Now, you played a big role yesterday in the field day where everyone jumped in their trucks and off into the paddock we went, and we ended up at this little spot where it was all fenced off, and inside you could just tell the paddock had been broken up into parts. What were we looking at there yesterday?
So that fenced off area was part of a small plot trial for a legume demonstration. So we made these small plots to, it's fenced off to exclude grazing. And we were investigating sowing time, species selection, seed bed preparation and sowing rates of different legume species.
And how were these planted? Like just thrown out or direct drilled?
Yeah, just thrown out, so
right.
Feeding the chickens sort of style.
Yeah. And so out of all the plots, are there any in particular that you feel like look like being a winner for the rangelands of the Northern Territory?
Within the small plots, we had probably not as high establishment as we were hoping for, but on our other plots on Mount Sanford, on our commercial sites, we had really good establishment in the plots that were burnt prior to sowing. So by burning, we're removing all of the competition from other pastures.
There's a good number of cattle producers here for the field day. Yep. What were they saying to you about that trial?
They were really interested in learning about the potential weight gains from legume species. So as well as having the establishment plots here, we also have a weaner weight gain trial. So we've got heifers that go into a paddock with established stylo stands, and they're grazing that throughout the year. And then we also, to compare, we have a paddock of control heifers that go into a paddock with little to no introduced legumes. And then throughout the year, we weigh them several times to compare their weight gains. And we found that later in the dry season when the native pastures drop off, the cattle are choosing to eat those legumes as they have a much higher protein content and also just gives them higher diet quality in general.
And the weight difference between those two trials?
Yeah, so we found that the heifers in the legume paddock, they put on throughout the year 21 kilos more than the heifers in their controlled paddock.
Ooh, yep. So I'll let the country do their own calculator work there at $4.40 a kilo for a feeder steer out of the Darwin Port at the moment.
Yeah.
An extra 21 kilos.
Yeah, there's potential for that to be a huge benefit to industry. Yeah, we're still investigating the full production benefits that we can get from that.
How big is the commercial trial at Mount Sanford?
So we've got several. We've just got a same as Kidman, but just on a larger scale. So I've got one paddock that had legumes aerially sown three years ago.
Are we talking 100 hectares? What? It's large. It's large. Yeah, right. On a commercial scale.
Yeah, right, yeah. So that's sort of more a commercial scale, whereas at Kidman it was more of a pilot study on a smaller area.
Rightio. So do you think we'll see more of this in the top end?
Definitely. I think we've got funding to continue for another 12 months, so we'll continue monitoring those sites.
Yeah. And farming in the north can be easy when it rains. When you want it to rain. So, Mary, I'm going to grab this microphone and hand it to Emily Hines, who is from the Northern Australia Climate Program, one of the keynote speakers here at the Kidman Springs Field Day. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Thanks, Matt. Great to be here, isn't it?
We're firing on all cylinders. I think we lost our audience there for a moment, but we are back, thank goodness. Now, you got up on stage today in the VRD classroom to tell everyone the latest on El Nino. We've been seeing it in the media. What is the latest on this weather pattern? What's it doing?
Okay, so, I mean, a lot of people have been approaching me, a lot of pastoralists reaching out and just saying, what is all this? There's a lot of media hype. As you know, there's a lot of different terms that are not scientifically used terms for describing this El Nino event, but it is in place. The consensus is out from all international models, not just the Bureau of Meteorology's model, but it's all suggesting that, you know, it's peaking through spring, and it will probably break down late summer at this stage, but keep looking at the forecast as we go. But in terms of the effects and the impacts for the Northern Territory, I suppose they're a bit varied. We have a greater impact on the eastern seaboard when we have El Nino events.
One point that stuck in my mind this morning was when you put up on the screen the map of Australia and the colours, the chance of getting below average rain. And the map looks red. It looks awful for the month of September and October. But as you pointed out to the room, how much rain does everyone here get in September? It's sort of bugger all.
Yes, yeah, and that's correct. And I think reading those maps appropriately is a big part of my extension role with the Northern Australian Climate Program. But it is showing a greater likelihood for decreased chance of rainfall throughout the Northern Territory during September, and that changes as we move towards that closer to the wet season onset, which is around November, certainly.
What could it mean for the wet season onset and just the wet season in general, Emily?
A bit too early to say the wet season in general, because there's a whole lot of stuff. These forecasts, long-range forecasts, do pick up all the different indicators, big climate indicators that are going on, and sea surface temperatures and all the things that are happening, but it doesn't pick up the shorter-term drivers. So if we get weather events from, say, the Madden-Julian Oscillation and cyclones and troughs and things that pass through, they're not going to be picked up until sort of fortnightly, monthly timescales. But in terms of the outlook, the northern rainfall onset, which we use as a bit of an indicator of when our first rains start from the 1st of September.
It's when the first 50 mils falls in a location.
Yes, and it's not it's an accumulated 50 mils. It's not, it's not a once-off 50 mils, so it could be 5 mils from the 1st of September, and then you might get another storm a couple of weeks later, and eventually you get to 50 mils. So it's suggesting this is going to be late, and that's what we generally see in El Nino years for the north, a later onset to that the northern rainfall.
Okay, potentially a later start to the wet.
In the north, yes. And south, there is a signal for a bit of rainfall, increased chance of above median from sort of creeping in from October and definitely November. But again, these forecasts get updated every second week, so it's important to keep looking at them and, you know, look at your local weather forecast for the 1 to 2 week stuff.
What was the key message you wanted to get to the cattle producers here in particular today?
I think that the media has a big voice, and those terms which you may be familiar with, there's a super El Nino and there's a giant lizard Godzilla El Nino, which...
I think the BBC might have used Godzilla.
Yeah,
I think it's
definitely, if you Google search it, I mean, there's people talking about extreme events since the invention of the printing press. I'm not sure what the printing press has got to do with weather. But, yeah, there's a whole lot of hype around it. It certainly does and will have impacts in the location where all that warm water is placed. Mm. But for Australia, it's that dry descending air, which means that we don't have a lot of energy. But in saying that, a bit of a caveat, a lot of the waters around northern Australia, western Australia and southeast Australia, including Tasmania, they're anomalously warm. So there's a chance for convection and activity to happen if we get the right weather systems to come through there as well.
Okay. Don't go getting scared about Godzilla.
Not just yet, but it's certainly the temperatures are high, the rainfall is looking less likely, and unfortunately, global temperatures do spike the year after an El Nino. So next year's, if you thought it was hot this year.
It got to 37 yesterday here at Kinmen Springs, which when you're doing a field day out in the paddock, mm-hmm. is quite noticeable.
Yeah,
you've got to keep the fluids up. What I know you go to so many of these field days around the north. What have you loved about Kinmen?
Oh, the views. I mean, the sunset views up at the top there at the house is great. It's always a beautiful drive in through Jasper's Gorge when you come in as well. But, you know, they run a great show here. There's some really good looking cattle, some great research going on, important research too for the industry, which I think, and coming together, it's like a reunion of sorts, isn't it?
Yeah. And to me, it seems like a very good mix here today of researchers, cattle producers. Good mix.
Yes.
Of people and backgrounds. Thank you so much for talking weather with us on the Country Hour today. It's one of the Country Hour's favourite subjects.
My pleasure.
And let's hope for a good wet season. Have you seen these? We were talking about this at the start of the program. This is the virtual fencing collar.
Looks too heavy for my neck.
It's 2.5 kilos. It's a bit too tough for my neck, but these there's some cows behind us here in the yards. They've got the collars around them and are looking happy. Yeah. Thank you so much. I'll let you get back to it. I think they're literally at the last session of the day, so I appreciate you skipping out.
Time for sandwiches, Matt. I'll save you one.
That is Emily Hines from the Northern Australia Climate Program.
My name's Spud Smith. I'm originally from Mungindoi, but I live in Umpty-Doo and I love the country here and keep it up. Love it.
I love it too. And I love broadcasting from the Victoria River District this afternoon. I trust you are enjoying the broadcast. In our second half, we'll be heading back out into the paddock to talk about the use of fire for reducing woody thickening out in paddocks. And we'll also just be catching up with a bunch of people in the shed to see what they've loved about the last couple of days here at the famous Kinmen Springs Station. As I mentioned earlier, this government research station, it all started here in 1966. The first manager was just 24 years of age. His name was Brian Hill. Can you imagine being out here in the mid-60s? Holy dooly, but Brian must have done a good job, because from there it's turned into one of the most important research stations in Northern Australia. A lot of the work that happens here goes on across the north. It starts here and then spreads because of some of the great work that has happened here over the decades. So looking forward to telling you more stories from Kinmen in our second half.
Nightlife with Philip Clark.
Informed, not overwhelmed.
The bill doesn't ban gambling. It doesn't restrict anybody's right to gamble at all.
Beyond the headlines.
How about this story? An AI assistant was asked to do something as simple as book and gym class, but it decided to go rogue.
Fun conversations.
Just continue to get better and live forever.
Thank you. I'm going to have that as a goal trip. I can't afford to live forever. I haven't got enough cash.
Nightlife with Philip Clark.
Monday to Thursday from 10.
On ABC Local Radio.
The Country Hour is today broadcasting from Kinmen Springs. I'm in the cattle yards. I'm under a shed next to a, a very fancy crush. And it's lunchtime. I've just been given a nice bit of watermelon, little steak sandwich. Don't mind if I do. The catering to Penny and her team out here, they have done a sensational job in the catering. It's been absolutely delicious. I'm proper fed up. Fed in a good way. Fed in a good way. Now, 12 past one, we're at Kidman Springs, which for decades now has been researching the impact of fire on northern landscapes. And yesterday, senior researcher Dr. Robin Cowley spoke about the use of fire to reduce woody thickening on cattle stations. I asked Robin, how big of an issue is the spread of woody native trees? How big of an issue had it become in the top end of the NT?
So, in the northern NT, on grazed areas, we don't have as much fire in these savannas as we used to have. And fire moderates the amount of woody plants that you have. So if you don't burn regularly, you will get an increase in woody plants, particularly if you have high rainfall years. So what we found in on Kidman Springs, and we've been monitoring woody cover since the 1970s, inside and outside long-term exclosures, as well as on a fire experiment we have since the 1990s. And what we've found is that if you don't have any fire, you do get a big increase in woody cover. But the other thing we've also found was that it's been an extraordinarily higher rainfall period that we've been in. And we all know that in higher rainfall areas, you have more trees. Mm. And so we've had multi-decades of, on average, 850 mils of rainfall here at Kidman Springs. The long-term average in this area is 650 mils. So you can understand that with that higher rainfall, it's going to be able to carry more trees. We had a few dry years between 2018 and 2020, and during that time we did see some deaths.
Well, I remember the story of a lot of native trees dying in the VRD in Sturt Plateau.
Yep.
So in the end, was the diagnosis for that just drier times?
Yep, that's right, because there's not as much water in those drier years, and they're really thick. They're competing with each other for the water that's there, and in those drier years, they just self-thin. Yeah, so it's just a natural fluctuation. Now, you see this a lot more in North Queensland, and in Queensland in their rangelands, they'll talk about, you know, the woody plants and the amount of thickening fluctuating quite a bit with rainfall, whereas we've just been very lucky over here in the Victoria River District where we've had pretty good seasons for a few decades now. And so it just meant that trees could keep increasing with Gabe Andon.
A question from a cattle producer to you today was, can I just use grazing, more grazing than using fire to reduce woody thickening?
Yep.
What's
so,
your thoughts?
Well, last year we went to 50-year grazing exclosures and we counted the woody plants inside and outside of those exclosures. And we found that actually there was more woody thickening with no grazing. So inside those exclosures, we had a higher density of woody plants than in the grazed areas. Now, I will say that in the grazed areas here on Kidman Springs, we're grazing moderately. We're grazing according to recommended safe carrying capacity. So it's relatively light, you know. Mm. It might be a different story if we were grazing heavily, for example. But, grazing wasn't really what was impacting woody thickening in this region.
Right. And so, if fire is a tool to reduce woody thickening, what is the advice on how to do it and when to do it?
Yep. So we've had this fire experiment for 33 years here now, where we've been trialling different fire frequencies every 2, 4, or 6 years versus unburnt. And we've been trialling the time of year that you burn as well. So whether you burn in June, early dry season, or in October, late dry season. So the idea is that in June you'll have a slightly cooler fire, and in October you'll have a hotter fire. And what we found is that on the black soils, it didn't really matter whether you burnt in June or October. As long as the fuel loads were sufficient for an effective fire, burning every 4 years in June or October, you got similar results in managing the woody cover. And it's really important to focus on the black soils, because the black soils were where the trees had the most negative effect on pasture growth. Mm. And they are the most productive parts of the landscape. So if you're thinking about where am I going to put fire on in the landscape, that's where I'd be thinking about first, because that's where you're going to get the best return for your fire investment on pasture growth and long-term carrying capacity.
Because I've seen paddocks here today where, yes, there are trees, there's woody thickening, but there's just there's grass completely around the woody timber. So if you're a cattle producer, should you be worried about that?
Yeah. So we found that on the red soil, it really didn't matter that much if you did get woody thickenings. Those trees, they might be getting water elsewhere. The leaf litter might be making the grass grow more. We don't really know. So if anyone wants to do a PhD on that subject. But, yeah, you can burn in your red country. If you wanted to manage woody cover on your red country, though, you needed to burn late in the dry season to get an effective fire. So to actually manage those woody plants.
Which sounds dangerous, using fire in the late part of the year.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing it for 33 years. May have escaped once or twice, but it's more difficult to do it in October. So if you can get an effective fire in June, definitely go for it. And that means you've got to have the right fuel loads. Don't bother lighting up if you don't have enough fuel to get an effective fire to manage your woody plants, because then you just lose your grass and you've still got your trees.
So my last question to you, Robin, is here at Kimmins Springs, there's paddocks where you've been able to say, we haven't had fire in there since the 90s. So what happens late afternoon and there's a thunderstorm and lightning strikes? Like, you must have to jump into action quickly, otherwise you're losing decades of research, yes?
Yeah. So last year we did actually have wildfires across Kidman Springs in November. And, I mean, thanks so much to the manager and assistant manager. They saved the long-term fire experiment from burning. Right. But our long-term exclosures did burn. And you know what? That's fine, because they're not a fire experiment. They're a grazing experiment. And we've seen the impact that late fire had on the woody cover, which has kind of cleaned out those plots quite a bit. So you definitely can get lightning fires where there hasn't been any grazing or, burning for a long time.
Thanks for your time on the Country Hour. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, big thanks to Dr. Robin Cowley, who's with the NT Department of Agriculture and Fisheries. You are tuned into the Country Hour, broadcasting from the Kidmans Springs Field Day in the Victoria River District. I'll be taking you into the big shed next, and you'll get to meet some of the people who have travelled to this remote event. But first, here is another song request from Kidman.
Hi everyone, Gretel here from the Department of Ag, and we're out here at the Kidman Springs Field Day. I'd love to hear some Chris Stapleton.
I can be your lucky penny, you can be my four-leaf clover.
It's been a big couple of days here at the Kidman Springs Field Day. Let's go and see what the highlights have been for everyone. Kim Agnew from Sorensis, Kidman Field Day. What's been your highlight?
Well, I got to say, just coming to Kidman Springs for the very first time, extraordinary environment, and the enthusiasm and energy in the group has been amazing.
Pat Moran from the NT Livestock Exporters Association, what's been your highlight?
I've learned a lot, Matt. Learned a lot. Always do on these field days. And the talk we just had with some of the large corporate pastoralists and the land board was really interesting. So that was probably my highlight.
I learned that Brahman cattle to Indonesia are getting sort of $4, $4.40 a kilo. And cattle with Wagyu are heading to Indonesia getting $6 a kilo.
I was a bit shocked by that. But no, it was a big figure.
Kidman Springs Field Day for 2026. Trudy Oxley, what was your highlight?
Seeing these panels and the depth of conversation and how much there was to learn from a lot of the people that were up the front telling us about their experience, it was great.
And you've got a pastoral map to take home.
Yes. My son keeps stealing the other ones.
Enjoy.
Thanks.
We're at the Kidman Springs Field Day. Belle from the CRC for Northern Australia, what was your highlight?
Oh, the virtual fencing collars was fantastic.
I can't believe there's 700 of them out there.
I know, right? And you can see them on your phone, all these little dots peppered across the landscape. They look fantastic. Oh, Kidman Springs is so special. I travel right across Northern Australia for work, but I don't think you can get past Jasper Gorge and the drive-in. The barramundi fishing looks incredible as you come through, the donkeys, the cattle. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Enjoy.
Thank you.
Kidman Springs Field Day. What's been your highlight, Shane, from Lejeune Station?
I think it's just good getting down here and getting around like-minded people and being in the room and having conversations.
Tash from NT Cattlemen's Association, your highlight of the Kidman Field Day?
My highlights have absolutely been the virtual fencing. We got to see them put the collars on in real life, also got to see how settled and how happy they were to have them on. Some of them had a little bit of a spat, but mostly just about life as usual. Also some pretty cool stuff that they're doing with the automatic mustering function that's coming up. So super exciting. I think, is it E Shepherd or just Shepherd?
Well, the company here is E Shepherd, yeah.
Yeah, so really fantastic stuff. And they've got some trials that are happening outside Kidman Springs already, which we got to see that in action and how that's working for that particular producer. And she's got amazing things to say about it and how much time it saved her and how much extra country she can push her cattle across because she now knows she can trust that technology to bring them back. So I think it's just phenomenal.
Abby from Cotton Australia, what's been your highlight?
I think meeting with industry has been really great. There's some really passionate people here, both researchers and producers, which has been really great to connect with all of those people. And some really interesting discussions about diversification in the NT, which has been great. Great to learn about that.
Sandy Hussey from the NT Cattlemen's Association, what's been your highlight of the field day out here in the VRD?
My highlights are really just hearing from all the producers, all of their own experiences. There's been some big lessons, there's been some big wins. So really love seeing producers at days like this and hearing from them, and hopefully they're taking a lot out of it. And yeah, next 2 years we come back and we'll be more updated.
In 2 years' time, do you think we'll see virtual fencing out in commercial cattle country of the NT?
I would like to think on smaller scale, yeah. Maybe we've heard a lot about using it for, you know, different land management or holding cattle on different water points and, you know, different sort of assisting other infrastructure and other investment. I think there's a place for it, yeah. Probably not on every animal in a big herd, but definitely.
I did the figures on 50,000 head. That's $17.5 million.
Yeah, look, I don't think we'll see that in the next 2 years.
Joe Atkins from Bullow River Station, what's been the highlight for you here in the VRD in the Kidman Field Day?
I think this, the farm drive yesterday was really interesting, you know, in the area. And for me it was, because I'd never been around Kidman Springs before. So that was very interesting country and what they're trying to implement, I guess, in many ways. Whether it's pasture, virtual fencing, all that sort of stuff, to come to the one area and to be able to see that in action and get a bit more of an insight, it's been fantastic.
It's kind of amazing that they have fire trials here that have been going for more than 30 years.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And I think that's, it plays a big part in every industry, pastoral industry, definitely up here in the north, is fire trials. It's such a good tool. If it's used and implemented in the right way and the right time, it can be our life saviour, you know, in a good year and a bad. So, yeah, I'm very impressed from what I've seen and what I'm hearing from other pastoralists at this field day. Has been fantastic. And, you know, I think there's a fair few of us, including myself, that probably got things sitting in the back of our mind we'd like to ask the question or say, but at the same time I am a listener, so I prefer to listen and try to, you know, implement certain things that I take away from days like today and implement it before I splurge out about saying anything about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Thanks for your time, Joe.
No worries at all. Thanks, Matt.
We're talking about highlights of the field day out here at Kidman Springs. Stacey from the NT Department of Ag, what's been your highlight?
Oh, I think the two panels on the first day have been my favourite so far. Some great facilitators and great panellists.
The one on how to manage people, there was something in that for everyone, wasn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a massive topic and it doesn't get talked about enough, I don't think, in the industry.
We're talking about highlights of the Kidman Springs Field Day. Mark from E Shepherd, what's been your highlight?
Just connecting with people in the north. It's been fantastic. I don't get up here enough. And, yeah, we've had a great time. They've been really good hosts. They've fed us well. There's been some ripper talks. And, yep, thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. Can't wait for the next one.
Beautiful. Highlights of the Kidman Springs Field Day.
G'day. Well, I've come all the way from New Zealand, so I left home in 5 degrees, got here and it's about 30 degrees, so that's been a nice break from winter and incredible to see the farming or, you know, production up here, how different it is, some of the challenges, the opportunities. It's been really insightful, yeah.
Do you get a chance to explore the north before you head home?
A little bit, but hey, even just being here is exploring for me. It's been a bit of an adventure, and yeah, like I said, really enjoy just having a look around, and you know, the people have been amazing, so good to be here and good to see it for myself.
Yep, they've come from New Zealand, they've come from far and wide to be at Kidman Springs in the VRD this week. The field day, it's been such a busy couple of days, a lot into the program, but it's been fantastic. And I hope you've enjoyed the Country Hours broadcast from this event. A big thanks to Tom Robinson and the MCR team back in Darwin who have helped to make this possible. We are pushing the limits of radio broadcasting out here in the VRD, but we have made it. A big thanks to Zach and the team here at Kidman Springs for having me. It's been a wonderful couple of days out here in the Victoria River District. The country's looking pretty good. Let's hope those fires stay away. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday afternoon and keep it rural.